all imperfect, and we're getting ready to take a vow that will last us through the lifetime. We've already learned that man has a problem. God created woman as the answer to that problem. And so any sensible man is going to stop and think, do I want this to be my answer? And obviously she's going to say, do I want to accept this problem and try to fix him? And so today, we want to talk about before the wedding. That is going to be a big thing that all of us need to consider as you're thinking about your marriage and whether you will have a happy life and so forth. It really depends on what you do before the wedding. So today we're going to start looking at marriage from all different directions. As we look at it in every way we can possibly think of, we're going to see that our first lesson today is going to actually be this one, and that is before the wedding. Now, the reason for that is because what happens over here after the wedding depends on what happens over here before the wedding. And it is for that reason that today we're going to talk about before the wedding. Now, as we think about before the wedding, this often happens. The man who loved you and kissed you before the wedding may hit you, hate you, curse you after the wedding. So oftentimes, such a thing as this happens. But on the other hand, this also happens here. The man who loved you and kissed you before the wedding will love you, adore you, serve you, care for you, esteem you, sacrifice for you, protect you, and will enjoy doing it. And so you can have a great life, or if you don't make the proper decision before the wedding, you can have a terrible life. Now, before the wedding is a time to learn what is important and what is not. For an illustration of this, before you go down and get your driver's license, you need to learn that the gas gauge is not one millionth as important as the oil gauge. Yet most of us really think it is. If you run out of gas, you're in trouble. But what we need to understand is, what's the difference? Well, if you run out of gas, you're going to have to walk a couple miles to get some. If you run out of oil, your car is ruined. So we need to learn the difference between those two gauges. We need to learn the difference between the wear on your paint job and the wear on your tires and your brakes. One just makes the automobile look a little ugly. The other can get you in an accident that can actually send you to prison. Now, what are the things in marriage that we need to learn about and we need to consider and think about? What are the important things to look for before the wedding? So as we start today in looking at it in this way, we want to note that such things as a house and golf and sewing, cooking, skiing, vacations, all those things that we look at that we're going to bring into our life are not really important. Oh, they're a little fun. Some are lots of fun, but they're not really important. So we say, what is important? Now, I want to call your attention to the difference between my opinion and the Word of God. And the reason I want to do that is because in the first half of this lesson, I'm going to give you my opinion. In the last half, I'm going to give you the Word of God. Now, my opinion is merely based upon my experiences in life. It's kind of like David when he says, I was young and now I'm old. And then he began to tell us what he has seen through life. And so that really is what I'm going to do to start with. To take a look and see some things that we might not think about, but that we do need to really stop and consider and think about before the wedding. So first of all, I want us to understand teenage marriages have the highest rate of divorce of any group. It has the least success and the least chance of success. So I want you to really think about this, young people. And as you grow into those later teens and you begin to feel that you are mature, that you understand what you're doing, just stop to think that if you get married during your teenage years, history shows constantly, all the time, that the highest divorce rate in the land happens by those people in that particular age group. So think about that before the wedding. Now, in addition to not being a teener, then what else is really, really important to think about before the wedding? Something we might not consider is communication. Now, believe it or not, this is the number one complaint of wives. I'm talking about all wives. I'm talking about my wife, and I'm a perfect husband. I want you to know that this is the number one complaint of all wives. I'll give you an illustration right now to illustrate this. We'll probably talk about it later. One time at Kirkland, we had 270 people down there at that time, and so I decided to teach a class on husbands. And I invited husbands to come to this class. There was about 32 men, I think, came to class. They were all the pillars of the church. Elders, deacons, pillars. They wanted to come. They came to class, and they were excited about it. Now, little did they know that a few weeks before, I had written to the wives of every one of them. And I said, would you please send me your number one complaint you have about your husband? And you can also send me the number one thing you want to brag about. Well, every one of them sent back and said, my husband is a wonderful husband. He is, and they began to tell what a wonderful husband they had. And then they all began to say what their complaint was. So when I started the class, I told the men, I said, now, you don't know this, but here's what I did. I told them. I said, I'm going to read these letters to you. And they're going to be letters that your wives wrote. So I read them rather slowly. I said, here's the first one. Now, she complained about what a husband, wonderful husband you are. But here's what she said. I can't get my husband to talk to me. When he comes home, he sits down and turns on the TV or picks up the paper and blah, 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 and he won't talk. It was kind of interesting because I knew what was going on and they didn't. They all began to look at each other. Wonder which guy in here has a wife that said that. I know that's not me. Wonder which one it is. So I said, here's the second one. I picked it up. It's the same thing, just like the same woman had written. I took the third one. I read it, just like the same woman had read it. By this time, they're looking around. Who are these guys? I go on, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Every one of them are saying this. And all these guys are looking and wondering. And then I told them, fellas, every one of your wives put this down. So let's talk about it. And they would say, well, we talk to our wives, and they do, but we'll have to talk about this more in detail. Today, this is not my subject. Now, they looked at each other. What do we mean of this? I just want to give you an illustration. When I say wives, and in marriage counseling over the years, this is the number one complaint. So you think about it. The number one complaint. Now, one reason for this is normal, and one reason is a problem. And that's what you better find out before you get married. Before you, the wedding, you need to find out which one it is. Because one is normal. You're going to have a problem with your perfect husband. But one is a problem and not normal. So I want you to think about it. Now, when you think about communication, I want you, first of all, to go back and remember the sermon on the mind of man and the mind of woman. Remember how we talked about that? The mind of man and the mind of woman. And we see that when God created man, he gave him a mind. And God created man so in his own image, as a thinking being with a free will. That's how God created man. But man had a problem. So God created woman, and he gave her a mind. And her mind is the answer to what the problem is in his mind. But God also created her in his own image as a thinking being with a free will. Now, you could think that, would think that the two people would think alike. That's what would appear to you. I don't know how many hundreds, thousands of times. I've been doing something, maybe we both are watching TV, and I'm thinking about what they're saying. And I'm thinking she's also thinking about what they're saying, but she's not. When I look over, I say something to her, she had no idea what I'm thinking. Or she'll bring up some dumb question. What does that have to do with that? Right? We don't think alike. Absolutely. We can be driving across the mountain, and I'm thinking about all the awesome mountains, the glory of God, the rivers, all of this thing. And all of a sudden, she'll come up with some question that has nothing to do with it. Maybe even pick up a magazine and start reading it instead of looking at that. We don't think alike. No man and woman does think alike. So here's the problem. Remember, God made everything about a woman different than the man. Now, it has to be this way because the answer can't be the same as the problem. Think about that. If I go to school and the math teacher gives me a problem, I want you to add this up, this up, this up. And so I'm looking at all these figures, and I'm trying to add them up, and I can't do it. I've got a problem. So I go to some whiz, and I say, can you give me an answer to this problem? And he said, well, what you do is you add this up and this up and this up and this up. I know that, but I don't want the problem. I want the answer. And all they do is just repeat the problem. I don't want the problem. I want the answer. The answer to every math problem is different than the problem itself. And so it is with everything. Doesn't make any difference what it is. The answer is different. Now, woman was created by God as the answer to his problem. God said so. So shouldn't we expect her to be different than man? because she's the answer to our problem. And so our minds are going to work differently. And as we start thinking about this, first thing we need to learn today, a man must think before he talks. When a man starts to make a decision, something will happen and he thinks, okay, let's suppose he's thinking about whether he ought to quit his job or something and move out of the country. He'll start thinking. And he's out there working and he'll think about it day after day. In the evening, he'll think about it. And he'll think about, well, if I do this, then, but if I don't do it, then, and he'll think. And he'll think. And he'll think about it. And he'll keep thinking. And he's going to think before he ever makes a decision. But that's not what a woman does. A woman thinks by talking, believe it or not. When she starts talking, she doesn't mean everything she's saying, she's just thinking. If your wife comes up and says, you know, I was wondering whether we ought to maybe just move to another state. Don't get upset and say, oh, why would you want to do it? She's just thinking. So she'll be saying, yeah, I think that it might be good, blah, 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 and she'll talk and she'll talk and she'll talk and she'll talk about a whole lot of things. And if you try to solve her problem, she'll say, I don't have a problem. I'm not, why? No. We try to solve their problems, but they don't want them. They're thinking by talking. Now, you just write that down, and you're going to see that that happens. There's a big difference. I hope we'll get around to talking about it more later. But here's the illustration. And that is, there are disasters that come along with this. Now, it's normal. You're going to have a normal communication problem, but you can also have a disastrous communication problem because there are men with problems. And the reason they don't talk is not because they're thinking, but because they have a problem and they're trying to hide it. So if for any reason, young lady, you can't communicate, you know your marriage is headed for problems. So let's look at it. As we look at it here, a man just doesn't want to talk. Well, that's normal. He doesn't want to talk unless he has decides to solve a problem. Now, that's okay. May be that way. Or it may be that he can't talk. You say, can't talk. What do you mean? Well, because if he talks, he might let the cat out of the bag. He might let you know that there's some things going on in his life he doesn't want you to know. Or he has a secret, and he's not about to tell what this secret is of whatever it might be. Or on and on and on and on and on and on. I'm just pointing out, spend enough time before the wedding to understand that, yeah, we can talk about things. Ask yourself, are there any addiction problems before the wedding? Now, when you think about it, if they use drugs or alcohol, there probably is. If you say, well, yeah, I just use it, you know, I just have a couple of beers, I just do this or that. Okay, mark it down. There probably is. You see, the reason I'm saying this is because, as I said in David's word, I was young and now I'm old. And I can guarantee you, when somebody comes in with a marital problem for marriage counseling, and I ask them, do you drink? Well, I'll have a beer occasionally. Well, okay, anybody knows that's not... Don't be dumb enough to think having a beer occasionally will ruin a marriage, but that's not what that means. That is not what that means when you start asking the individual, what do you mean by occasionally? Oh, once in a while after work? Well, not too bad. But what do you mean once in a while? Once a month? Oh, no, no. Once a week? Oh, no, no, no. Well, once every 3 days? Well, yeah, or maybe a little more. Well, how often? I want you to tell me how often you have that beer. Well, every day I have one. Okay, now we got it down, you have one a day. What does one mean? Do you ever have two? I'm talking to you now like I'm talking to him. Do you ever have two? Well, see, yeah, once in a while I have two. Okay, so you have a couple of beers. Yeah. How often do you have two? Well, yeah, about every time I stop, but once a day. And you get down and maybe he has three. And a little while, it's way up there. 3 or 4 a day. A case on the weekend. Now, I'm just telling you from experience, time after time after time after time, this happens. So I'm just saying, if there is alcohol or drugs involved, there probably is. I'm not saying it's definite. Then, as you talk with them, if they deny it, it's almost sure there is. No, I don't have a problem. No, you don't ever talk to somebody who has a problem. No, we don't have a problem. Which means, yeah, they definitely have a problem. And then, if they don't totally quit, there is. You ask them, stop, quit. Well, no, I want to. Okay. You're going to have a problem. I'm just telling you from experience. Told you. I'm going to talk first half here about these things, and then the last half get down to what God said. There are sexual problems to think about. From Sodom to Seattle. As you go back and you see how that generations degenerated and went away from God, it's sexual problems accelerated. You read that in Genesis 19, and you read it again in Romans 1. This is a sermon within itself. As the morals of society goes down, sexual problems go up. And think about all that we have today. There are many sexual problems. And as you go into a marriage, you remember that one out of every 50 men are homosexuals now. One out of every 3 girls are molested by a family member. Every one of them will be affected in your marriage. Some men dress in women's clothing, and they only do it at home. I'm thinking about things that you just have to laugh at. 6'6" guy I'm thinking about right now. Comes home, puts on his hose and his pantyhose and his dress and high heels and sits around that night in a wonderful marriage. Some men hit and beat their wives while having sex, and they get no pleasure unless they do that. This is all out there. Now, there are some normal people, and you can have a wonderful sex life, but you have to work at it. I just want you to consider the chances of getting the wrong one. Think about the chances as you're looking it's something to consider, isn't it, before the wedding. I could tell you some stories today, sad stories, members of the church. A bride calls her dad from the motel on the wedding night. He gets there at 3 o'clock in the morning and finds a groom sitting on the bed confessing he's a homosexual and that he wants nothing to do with this woman. And the poor guy the poor dad was strong enough to kill him, and that's what he felt like. But he leaves her, and of course, in that one occasion, she's pregnant. I could tell you about another man that married a beautiful girl, very pretty, and mistreated her for 25 years. They had 5 sons, and finally he divorced her for his male lover. This is my first case of running across to counseling a homosexual. Another man marries a beautiful woman, and he won't touch her. Night after night, and she learns that he can only have sex with a pornographic magazine, yeah, or a young girl, or his own daughter. All these members of the church. Do you think it's worth thinking about before the wedding? Now, God says that premarital sex is wrong. But how can you tell if there's a problem? Well, that's the purpose of a long courtship, not a short, flashy, immature good time. But it's really getting to know people. Now, keep this in mind. When you fall in love, love has been described as temporary insanity. Now, that's wonderful and it's great, and I say enjoy it. But don't get married until you can think with your head instead of just feel with your heart, which is the same as feeling with your stomach. Before the wedding is an important time. So when dating, keep your eyes open. What kind of music and friends does he have? This will tell you what kind of home you're going to have. Who is it that he brings over? Who is it he plays basketball with? Who is it he runs around with? This will tell you what you've got in going to have after you get married. And don't confuse selfishness with strength. One brings happiness, the other brings misery. Now, when you ask me, what's the difference between selfishness and strength? I don't even know whether I can describe it. I don't think I have the power of words to slice it. But everybody knows what it is. Everybody understands that there is a man of strength that says this is what we are going to do when it needs to be done that way. But he asks her, and he will have you to make decisions what you want to do if it doesn't really have to be that way. That's the difference. But as you look at it, you must ask yourself, well, does he always have to have his way, or she? What happens if they don't get their way? This is how you tell. Do they always have to decide where we're going to go eat? Do they always have to decide what we're going to do on Tuesday night? What happens if you want to change and do something else? Do they pout or get mad? You see, before the wedding is a time to find out if you're marrying somebody who is really selfish. Now, if there are things you don't like about a person before you marry him, remember, you can't change them after you marry him. How do I put this? You can't say anything absolutely. Somebody can say, well, my husband was like this, but he has changed. And okay, I understand that. I understand. What I'm trying to say is that out of every 100 cases, there won't be one person that will change. Especially young ladies like to think, well, here's some things I don't like about him now, but I'll be able to change it after we get married. After we get married and set up our home and our little nest, I'll be able to change him. And you're going to find out, if you can't change him before, you can't change him after. But let me tell you a little secret. And it's a secret you won't find out until it's too late. You have more power over the person you're going to marry than you will ever have over the person that you do marry. The person you do marry understands, I've got you now. I'm married. Why should I change? If he or she is ever going to change, it's going to be before the wedding. Now, as we look at this, I see that we have this up here. There are seven areas that cause problems in marriage. Now, psychiatrists have made this up across the land. They took surveys of all marriage counselors, hundreds, thousands of them, and says, out of all the people, Christians, non-Christians, atheists, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, out of all the people that you counsel, what are the seven major reasons for divorce? What's the seven? Then they said, after they list the seven, if you have one of these problems, you can make it. Now remember, this is not a preacher talking. This is heathens. These are counselors, unbelievers. If you have one, you can make it. If you have two, you have serious problems. And if you have three, you're going to get a divorce. Now, what are these seven things? That's the sermon for next week. Should you be here today and you need to make your life right with God, would you respond while we stand, while we sing this song?